Hello, everyone. This is Vicki Davis. We are here today for Finding the Right Fit. I'm going to hand this over for a brief introduction and some information from Pearson Publishing from Christine Getchell. Christine? Okay. Well, I'm not sure if Christine has perhaps stepped away. I'll go on video for just a moment and say hello. Christine, when you're ready to go on mic, I'm sorry you get to see my mess here. I've got senior slideshow in the background and papers to grade, and you're getting to see a little bit of a mess here. But I'm still at school, but having a few internet problems at the house. But I'll be on video for just a little bit. Christine, when you're ready to go on mic, just let me know by dropping in the chat. And you can go on, Mike. It's very early morning for Julie Lindsay in China right now, about 6 a.m. to be exact. And she just sent me a note that she's in an ISTE board meeting and sent call to school. So I'm trying to get her to drop in if she can briefly. But we're going to go ahead and get started. Hoping Christine here will be able to say hello in just a moment. But we're going to talk about finding the right fit. This is a new presentation. You'll be the first audience to get this presentation. So I hope that you'll be putting information in the chat, asking questions in the chat, so that we can improve this to help people to be able to join in. So before I get started, I'm going to let Christine say a word, and then I will get started. Thanks. Sorry about that, everyone. This is Christine Getchell from Pearson Education. I apologize. It is dinner time at my household, and I'm on the East Coast, and it's 6 o'clock, so I apologize for the delay. I was getting dinner on the table for my children. But thank you to everyone that joined this evening, and I, again, apologize for the miscommunication with the time and for any technical difficulties that anyone encountered in changing the webinar platform at the last minute. But I actually am very excited about this new platform that Julie and Vicki are going to use today. It looks very exciting. I don't know how much I missed, but I'm just going to turn it right over because I know we're already after the start time, and I'm going to let Vicki and Julie go ahead and get into their presentation. And as you can see, the copy of their book is right on the first slide. And you can purchase that on the Pearson website or our Alan Bacon Merrill website. And I can send you a follow information after the webinar about purchasing information as well. And I know they have a website as well that gives more details about the book. So again, thank everyone for joining this evening, and I think we're in for a good treat.
This is Julie Lindsay from Beijing, China, and it's just gone 6 a.m. here in Beijing. Lovely spring moving into summer day. Great to be here. Good morning, Christine. We meet virtually. Hello to Lisa Dover, our platform coordinator, and to my colleague and friend Vicki Davis, who is taking the lead on this presentation. So it's great to be here, and thank you everyone for coming into the room for this webinar. Just a quick heads up, I won't be able to stay for the full session, I'm sorry. There are things happening here in China that will leave my attention in about 20 minutes. So thanks anyway, and I'll do what I can in the next 20 minutes. Thanks, Vicki. Over to you.
So everyone, we have four basic questions as we talk about exploring global projects. And a couple of these things, Julie, I'll just try to nudge over to you. You'll recognize them. But first of all, why global projects? Why do we need to be doing this? How do I define the criteria for evaluating global projects? And we're going to give you a couple of examples. And then where do I find global partners? Finally, when do I know that I'm ready? So let's go on and get into this. First of all, we have a poll. I'm going to make the poll active, and we want to find out a little bit about you and what is your role at your school? So you can see right out of the hand raise, there's four boxes. There's the smiley face, and then there's the away. And if you're away, if you'll just hit the away button, then we know not to call on you. There's the raise hand button, and then there's the A, B, C, D, E button. So if you'll go ahead and click, what are you? An A, a B, a C, a D, a D. And so go ahead and select that if you will. That way we know you're listening, we can see who you are, what you're doing. We'll publish it to the board in just a moment. But go ahead and select, who are you? Let us get to know you there. A few others who haven't done their vote yet, so go ahead and if you'll vote, that would be great. So it's right by the raise your hand button. There's the A, B, C, D. And this is a tool we use. We actually use Blackboard Collaborate for all of our meetings for the Black Classroom Project. They are somewhat of a sponsor that we have, so we like to use this platform. Plus, we're very familiar with it. So let's publish this to the whiteboard. And you can see that we have mostly teachers. We have an administrator, a parent. Great. I'm a parent, too. And we have a few others, and then a few that maybe didn't find where the poll was or that sort of thing. So we've got a nice little mix. So first of all, why global projects? Why should we integrate this into the curriculum? And is it part of having, we hear about rigor, we hear about excellence in education. And just a note on the poll, the way you vote is actually up above the chat box. So you don't type it in the chat box, you just vote right up above. So here's a chart, and I know this is the U.S., and I think when we did our information earlier, it was mostly U.S. that we had here. So let's look at tasks carried out by the American workforce, 1960 to 2002. And I don't know if you want to type in some of your observations that you notice here, but you can see since 1990, routine tasks and manual tasks, the percentage change in those has actually decreased. So we're getting less routine tasks, less manual tasks. They're still there. But less and less of it. And abstract tasks are literally going through the roof. So many abstract tasks are required in schools now. So how do we deal with this? So what we have to have is all of these different type things. We need to have teachable moments that have nuance, unique situations, things that are coachable, things that require critical thinking and problem solving. But here's a big one. Projects where students can't copy from Wikipedia, a dictionary, or a textbook. Unique situations, interpersonal situations, collaboration, technology, co-creation, diversity, and personalized learning experiences. These are all the things that we need to be able to teach abstract tasks. So how can we do this? Just a little bit. How can we do this in the classroom? Well, I'll tell you how we can't do this. We can't do this with a textbook, even with the e-book. And books are going to evolve. Books are still very static. So even though we've worked very hard to make the Flat Classroom Project and the Flat Classroom book very interactive, have the QR codes and all that sort of thing in there, eventually I saw a presenter up at Harvard University. And he's literally got case law, and the students can converse around each individual chapter in the case law, which is phenomenal. And we will get there, where you can literally drill down and see things people have added, see projects attached to a paragraph, and that sort of thing. But right now, these experiences are not in a textbook. These textbooks are very linear, and you can't really interact with those. So how do we integrate this into our curriculum? How do we put it in there? The big thing about global collaboration is to realize when you're talking about a book, we measure with a test. You know, you've kind of got an endpoint. Destination is the test and how they do, which, you know, there's so many things we could say about how wrong that is. And you can certainly share your thoughts on that in the chat, because I do kind of watch the chat as we go. But the thing about global collaboration in education is that the journey is the destination. The experience of collaborating, the experience of problems we have and the things that we have and the situations, these are all part of the journey of global collaboration. Julie, I'd like you to talk a little bit about this slide, if you wish. This is actually one of Julie's here. Julie?
Sure. Thomas Friedman, of course, is a great supporter of what we do with Flat Classroom, and in fact, when he rewrote his book, The World is Flat, the 2007 edition, he included a couple of pages about what Vicky and I are doing. And we co-collaborated with him, actually, in terms of writing those pages. But, yeah, Tom talks about this globalization, to think global, so to think global, but keeping that local cultural flavor as well. And so, as it says here, the more your own culture easily absorbs foreign ideas and those practices and well-versed in its own traditions. So it means you have a greater advantage in the flat world. So when we approach our projects, when we approach this whole idea, this massive, scary idea in many respects of global collaboration in education, we always start by speaking to teachers and students about, well, you know, keep it local, think local. Can you actually do something with the classroom down the hall, for example? And often that's the hardest way to start. Often teachers teaching in adjoining rooms find it difficult to communicate, but can you break through that barrier? Can you break through the barrier of trying to collaborate with the school down the road in the same district, for example? If you can do that, well then perhaps then you're able to then look further and realise that there are other schools in all sorts of parts of the world or other opportunities that global input can be brought into your classroom. One thing I always do with my classroom is any sort of research I'm doing, any sort of topic that we're starting or researching, I say, well, you know, who can you connect? Who can you connect with to actually bring the truth or bring the facts or bring the experience into the class with us, rather than relying, as Vicky says, you can't rely on textbooks, you can't rely on the media necessarily. You really need to be reaching out and have a basket full of people who can actually globalise the learning experience for you and your students. Vicky, back to you then.
So he talks about, you know, thinking globally, acting locally. So a big part of what we encourage is service learning, where I've learned this and now here's how I'll apply it to my community. And there's one other big why, and that is if you look at Glossner's 99-1 principle, this is the principle they have found that sort of governs social media. In social media, about 90% of people in social media are lurkers. You're just reading. And, you know, there's some people who say you undervalue the value of the lurker, that actually a lot of, you can break down lurkers a little bit more, and they're people that read and then act offline, and that should be a different subset. But still, in online spaces, in social media, 90% are lurkers, 9% are intermediate contributors, and 1% are heavy contributors. Now, we cannot allow social media behavior to define how students interact in educational spaces online. And I have a sister who teaches online, and she says that every semester she has students who come in and they think that they can just log in and just look at things for 30 minutes and then that's enough. They don't realize they have to contribute to discussions. They don't realize that they have to be part of things. And co-authors cannot apply to educational networks. It's a different subset of our lives. We have our social lives, we have our professional lives, and our students have to be professional learners. So we want to move past that. So we need to have experiences where they can learn abstract tasks, troubleshooting, interacting, interpersonal skills, all of these things happen in global collaboration, as well as helping them understand what it's like to be a professional student. Now I have one more poll. How many projects have you already done in your classroom? A for done, B for one, C for two, D for three, and E for four or more. So I've already cleared the poll earlier, and just click the A and then hit whichever you have done. It's right, so if you came in a little bit later, it's right beside the hand raise, so you can see participants, and you should be able to see your name or my name, and then you'll see the little smiley face. These are the emoticons you can use in beside your name. I'm applauding right now. And you can mark that you're away, which is very good etiquette, so people will call on you, raise your hand, or you can click your poll there. So let's see our results here for those that are with us here. Let's go ahead, poll. This is a great tool to use when you are having students in here. Make sure they're all engaged. So if I was actually teaching all of you, I would be evaluating whether you were a contributor or not, because then I would know if you were listening or out walking the dog. So it looks like we have a few that are none. And just a few, so a few of us have done four or more of it. I think that's most of us like classroom folks. So we've kind of got a nice little mix here. So how do I define the criteria for evaluating global projects? This is the most of what we're going to be talking about tonight, or today, or this morning. First of all, know thyself. Know your student age. What curricular area do you want to integrate it into? Amount of time each week that you want to, are able to spend, your flexibility, your technology availability, and your own technology proficiency. These are things that you need to write down and be realistic with yourself. In fact, in the book, we've got these quizzes that we ask in each chapter to help you have sort of a reality check to make sure that you know who you are and what you can do. There's nothing worse than having somebody who has great intentions, that they're the nicest person in the world, and they sign up for a project, but they only have the kids once a month. Well, that's not fair if you're going to be creating a video. If you have partners who expect you to be contributing, you can't do that once a month. It's not fair. You need to do something else. So know yourself so that you can get ready and make sure you can find a good fit, and this is a very important part. Julie, I was hoping that you could talk about all the different aspects of global collaboration, because we want to make the point here about co-creation in particular and what that is. Do you mind?
Okay, so when we started to analyze, you know, our evolution of global collaboration, we looked at different projects around the world, we came up with this chart. In fact, global collaboration 1.0, 2.0, and 3.0. And the evolution, of course, is moving from a slow internet connection speed, where the type of connection is information exchange and classroom to classroom, but not heavily engaged. And so it might be an exchange of a few emails. It might actually be in conjunction with some sort of posted material using the other postal system. And of course, connection frequency is intermittent. That's a great start. I mean, and there are still projects that do this. So global collaboration 1.0, and that's fine. And then if you move into sort of the next stage, you sort of take advantage of faster internet connection speed. You can have perhaps intermittent or more ongoing connection. We have perhaps information and artifact exchange, so exchanging media because you've got the better bandwidth, and perhaps student interaction, etc. But then ultimately, this global collaboration 3.0, where you can take advantage of a much faster connection speed, if you have it, and the connection frequency can be ongoing, it should be ongoing, and that involves students being able to interact via some sort of social media, such as Edmodo or the Ming platform. Classroom-to-classroom interaction, student-to-student interaction, information exchange and artifact co-creation, where you've got the ability, but the software platforms, the bandwidth and the organisational structure of the project where co-creation can take place, teacher-to-teacher, student-to-student, student-to-teacher, etc. And that's exactly what we do in a number of our projects now, where we have an expectation that, in fact, teachers will be connecting in an ongoing capacity through real-time meetings, regular real-time meetings, as well as asynchronous discussion forums and communication portals. And we also have the expectation that co-creation will take place, that people will be contributing media and other different types of artifacts so that co-created artifacts can be the product of the project. So that's how we've worked out the different levels of global collaboration. Thanks, Vicky.
Julie, just let me know in the chat if you want to talk about the basic essentials. So if you kind of break it down, and we're not going to have time to go into everything tonight, but we are going to talk about the essentials, about what you need to understand and look at in here. So when you're looking at a project, of course, you've got the name of the project. And, you know, you can tell a lot about a project by the name, because if it has a good name, that's the kind of thing that you're not going to be in a project because it will get you in the local media. If it's the kind of thing that captures the imagination, it's the kind of thing that will grow and get people excited. What's your alignment with the curriculum? What are the aims of the project? What are the prerequisites? Make sure that you know those up front. Now, it's important because a lot of times in current global collaborative projects, so much is happening grassroots that some teachers may not know these things. And part of our writing the book is to say, okay, teachers, as you create these projects, we need to clearly spell these things out so that we can see where we have a fit and where the puzzle pieces come together. Because one thing we're finding is that this is not happening before teachers join projects. There's a pretty high dropout rate in a lot of global collaborative projects. We've kind of got ours down around 10 to 15%, but I know of some projects when they kick off, it can be up as high as 40 to 50%. With a project, and so you want to make sure you're very clear about these things. What are the standards, if any? The student level or age, and you typically have to use ages because the grade levels are so different from place to place. Will this be an individual or team? If you only have one computer and it's an individual project and every student's going to have a partner or a team, then it might not be a good fit for you. Will they be what were the topics they'll be investigating? What are the required inputs and the optional inputs? So you want to understand those. But also the required outcomes and optional outcomes. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. And thank you, Julie, for joining us. The workflow, and does it fit with your schedule? It's very important. We use a Google Calendar, and the teachers share when they're going to be on break so that you can very clearly communicate when you'll be there and when you won't be there. In the large projects where we have competitions like Classroom and NetGen, we have rubrics for evaluating the videos. And in the younger projects, the K-2 and the kindergarten and up through fifth grade for a week in the life project, the teachers will share assessments that they do because they tend to be different, so this is something the teachers sort of share. So In the book, you'll see, and there, we have a PD toolkit that will be going live soon. There's a project planning tool, and we have project design essentials in there. And these are the things that you want to make sure that you know about each project. We do have a flat classroom data bank that will be going up hopefully in June. We got so into all of the book launch things and all of our projects that data bank is not quite up yet. But it will be actually spelling out every single one of these things, so as you find a project, you can make sure that you know what those are very clearly. Now, in our presentation, we will be that we'll be posting a lot of, put this on my blog and share it. All of our projects you can see have Twitter handles, and that's a great way to find out about all of the different projects that we have going on and what's happening with those. But let's go through and look at a couple of these. We talk about required and optional outcomes, and when you're selecting a project, these are very important things. We've got some flat classroom examples and some non-flat classroom examples. Now, for those of you who may not know, the flat classroom projects were started about 6 years ago. Julie was a teacher in Bangladesh. Of course, she's now in China. I'm here in Camilla, Georgia at Westwood School. She's been here 10 years. About 6 years ago, she and I connected on our first project. We had 24 kids, and sort of happily, accidentally invented a method of co-creating that was very powerful, and a lot of teachers joined in. We have many in the room. If you are in one of our projects right now, if you'll just raise your hand so people can see who you are, or if you've done one of our projects before, I know we have Betsy, we have a lot of others who joined before, so if you raise your hand so people can know who you are, I'd really appreciate it. It's just the raise hand right by the A button. But you want to make sure that you know about what are the outcomes that are coming out of the project, and you want to keep it as simple or as little as possible. Flat classroom, we have a collaboratively edited wiki and a video. Those are the only two things you have to do when you're in flat classroom. DGT has a collaboratively edited wiki, and the students have offline action projects at their local school, and then they report on what they did. So they're very simple. You can see that we have blogging, and we have presentations of all of our students present in Blackboard Collaborate, just like we're doing. We have forum discussions, and we have keynotes delivered on YouTube and all sorts of things like that. But you want to keep it very, very simple. Now let's look at some other examples so you can see. Here's the Lucky Lady Book Project. This is a really cute project. Dr. Sarah McPherson and Susan Silverman. And their question is for young kids, is why are ladybugs considered to be good luck? Now, the teachers must use UDL, a Universal Design for Learning, in their lesson plans. And then they have to submit 7 graphics showing the other teachers what they did. So you're sharing best practices and sharing ideas and that sort of thing. And then classes may create their choice of drawing, so it's sort of some creativity that they have there. So these are the core outcomes. It's a very simple project. You can see this is pretty much Global Collaboration 1.0. But as Julie pointed out, it's fine to start at that level. You're starting, you're promoting global awareness, you're getting that the benefits. Research has shown that a global audience improves student learning and increases engagement. So you can get that started. So then we've got My Hero. Oh, and I'm sorry, I just used the word proofs because I was up at Harvard and I used that word, and I know we're not supposed to use that in terms of theories. But there is a theory that has been, trying to remember the terms they told me I had to use, and I can't. But anyway, and now we'll talk about My Hero. And in this project, which is so many students and teachers have collaborated on this, students reflect on what a hero is and who is a hero in their lives. And they create web pages and art and videos and all kinds and just comments and just suggestions that they have about a hero. And there's so many other things, but this is just a point that You must agree on your core outcomes and your optional outcomes up front. One mistake that teachers make is they get really excited. And they have 10 teachers and they all want to work together. And they say, oh, we're going to do this. And they all agree up front. And then it starts changing. Oh, we can do this too. And we can do this too. And we can do this. And it's a real turnoff. A lot of teachers are leaving global projects or leave a project because it changes too much. So having that consistency up front is very important. So let's look at the framework for Flock Classroom, just a very basic framework here. So this is a global project, in every sense of the word. It's flattened. It includes all different types of classrooms. You've got a Twitter handle. You've got a website. I think both are pretty important. We've got our techno-personal communications. Techno-personal communications is what you have when you have a computer and technology in between. We've got people and then technology. We've got asynchronous and synchronous communication. So this is synchronous, what we're doing right now. At the same time, we're in here together. And then asynchronous is not at the same time, leaving a message on the meme or in the wiki or that sort of thing. Look at the generation that we have here. We've got contemporary. So this Flock Classroom is for 13 and older. And then students create personal learning networks. That's how they have their information. And then what is the learning legacy? This is what is left behind. So this is an example framework. I should have added a slide, and I need to make a note to myself to ask about the grade levels that you teach. But if you'll go in the chat right now for me and let me know if you're elementary, middle, or high school, I'd like to customize the projects we talk about because I have way too many slides. We're not going to be able to use all of these. I've got a lot of different projects in here. So I would appreciate it if you would tell me about yourself and in which grade level you teach. Please do that in the chat. I'll take just a moment. And also, if you have any questions, go ahead and put those in as well. So we have K through A. I know K. There you go. K through A, elementary. I'm just doing a little bit of a tabulation here. Oh, good. So we've got a mix. Okay, so we have a couple business technology. So there are two of you in here like me. And, okay, Sherry, I don't know if that's Sherry Toledo, one of my favorite people. We have a lot of professors involved in the projects and that sort of thing. So, you know what, we've got a pretty good mix. Oh, you're a different Sherry, but that's okay. So we have a good mix here, so we'll talk about this. Now, one point I want to make, when you flatten, you can include all different age levels. So Flock Classroom. Sherry, we have expert advisors that are at the college level and beyond, or other educators. We have judges. Right now, we need some more judges for the NetGen project and the Flock Classroom project. We'll have judging happen this weekend, and so we need judges. You can sign up for that. Maybe Lisa Durf can grab that and give you that link so you can sign up. But so when we flatten, we have all different types. But contemporary is who are you primarily dealing with? So we've got the Eracism project. This is pretty much a middle school project, although we've got a bracket for high schoolers now as well. Now this is another example of how we flatten. You've got middle school kids debating using VoiceThread. That's asynchronous. They're debating a topic together. We have judges, which are a lot of college students as well as educators who've been trained on how to judge debate. They leave messages on the VoiceThread. The finals will actually be hosted probably the end of next week or the following in Whiteboard Collaborate, and that will be synchronous. So we've got debate brackets going through with this particular project. Let's look at NetGen is a lot like Flock Classroom. It's for older business classes, technology classes. So you've got NetGen and Flock Classroom, which are two projects that are for older. And then you've got elementary. We've got a week in the life, and we've got a pilot. It's called the K-2 project. for kindergarten to second grade, which we just started piloting with 40 different classrooms that signed up when we tweeted it out over Twitter. But here, the students are using VoiceThread and they're using Edmodo, and they're talking about different aspects of their life every week. So they're sharing about their classroom. They're asking questions about the other classroom, which is very exciting. Now let's look at some non-flat classroom things. And this is from chapter 2 of the book. This is the Shout Learning Tree Dating Project. Now citizen science is so important. I think that every science class should have citizen science, but you could use this in technology classes since you're as a cross-curricular since you're uploading or putting this in there. Now Shout Learning you can do kindergarten all the way up. And you can let them be as independent as you wish. But Jess Parker is a Smithsonian scientist who did a study a while back and found that trees in Maryland were growing a lot faster than they had predicted. So he's with the Smithsonian. They decided that what would happen if we had people around the world band trees and then measure those trees. And they decided they would use students and their science teachers. So you can register for this project with the Smithsonian. They'll send you a tree banding kit. You can band the trees, and then you can go out and measure them every month and upload your results to the Smithsonian. Now your question is, well, what if the kids measure it wrong? There's actually a very simple way to kind of tease out the noise in data and to find the mistakes. It's pretty simple to do from what they tell me. So citizen science is becoming a very powerful way to do this. Now, again, this is pretty much Global Collaboration 1.0, but if you go back and you download and you look at their data in this project, I'm pretty sure it's an open research project, then you can actually study and look at this yourself. So this is a phenomenal thing to do. They have an app on the iPhone and the iPad where you can count comets. NASA has a comet counting app. There's so many ways to be citizen scientists. There's the Monarch Butterfly Project. We mentioned a lot of these in the book in Chapter 2. Then you've got a project like this one that a teacher created, Sherry McGinnis out of Maine, created class chats. And her goal was to chat with at least 50 different classrooms throughout the year, and I believe she's a second grade teacher. And if you go to class chats since then, I'm not sure how much she's keeping it up. I think she's doing a lot with it. But there is education.skype.com, and it's run by Skype, and you can have people, you can go in and you can find other people that want to chat or to communicate. There's also the mystery Skype, and what you do is you have people who mystery Skype in, and then your students ask them questions to try to figure out where they're from, which is a very powerful way to bring the world into with your students. You know, we don't want to talk at the world, we don't want to talk to the world, we want to talk with the world. So especially with your young kids, chatting and communicating using Skype. And you can use Skype now, you know, with grandparents, with anybody, you can Skype and guess where they are. Such a powerful way to start collaborating. Now, I'm going to share two, and I see we have Amy Jambor here, and we have Betsy Sargent, we have quite a few others. And this was invented by Cindy Schultz. She's a Black Classroom Certified Teacher, and as part of our Certified Teacher Program, our goal is to help as many teachers as possible create projects. So we don't want it to be just about flat classroom, because we're full-time teachers. We want to help teachers create their own. And she's doing a project called When Missoula Was Young, which is a phenomenal project. The students go out to the graveyard, and it's flat because they're working with a local history organization and quite a few different organizations locally. But they go out, they mark the different gravestones using GPS coordinates, and then they go to their local history museum, they go online, and they research the people that they find on the gravestones, and then they're going back and adding the marker to that information they have there in the graveyard. And you think, well, how is that interesting? Well, what they've done is this third grade they're replacing their existing, they used to do tribal boards, and they would all do a local history project. Well, now they're moving in this particular district. It is going to have all fourth graders do this, and they're going to be part of documenting local history, which is very, very powerful. And so this is an example of how you can flatten and create your own project locally that meets standards. So most have a local history standard. But when students are done with this, they have a lot of technology proficiency. They're 21st century learners. You have the abstract tasks that you're having to do. You can't copy the information out of Wikipedia. In some ways, you're creating your own wiki. And you are flattening and ready to collaborate globally because you've learned how to collaborate locally. So this is a great example of how you can do something. What a big excuse people have is, I can't do this because it doesn't fit in our curriculum. Well, a local history project pretty much fits just about everyone's curriculum. You can do this. And go to When Missoula Was Young and find more about this as well. It's another one I love. It's called Perspective Detectives, and this was invented by Cynthia Sandler. You could do this at any grade level, and oh, I was just talking about Cindy Schultz. So, guys, welcome, Cindy, and if you have questions about Cindy, I don't know if your mic works, but I know I'm throwing you into this. Do you want to go on mic quickly and share a little bit about When Missoula Was Young and how you integrated it? Just a minute, maybe, if you're able. Nothing like being put on the spot. And that's what we do. We have about 60 or 70 Black Classroom Certified teachers now, and they can handle it. So, Cindy, let's see if you can do this.
Oh, my. I hope you can hear me. Can somebody put a chat message in there if you can hear me so I'm not rattling on? Okay. I'm actually presenting on Wednesday at the University of Montana, which is a collaborative project with Missoula County Public Schools, where I'm presenting this project along with another lady that's working on this project. So When Missoula Was Young project is a collaborative project between multi-age level and also cross-curriculars. Third graders, we have social studies students, and digital film students. Those are my students. So we're working on the history of people that lived in Missoula, our town, in 1883 when they were children. And we're going to end up with they're doing a lot of research, and some of these people are children of famous people, but nobody really knows what happened to the children. We're going to end up with videos that are narrated in first person by the third graders and show photos that they got in their research about that person when they were a child. And what it was like to live in Missoula in 1883. It's been really a fun project. It's been a lot of work, but it's been a lot of fun, too. And the goal is to take this, outside of the state, maybe internationally, that type of thing.
So this is an example of how you can, how things start. And, you know, all the abstract thinking that went into this, we talk about in the book about learning capital, about creating experiences, creating pilots, creating projects, and working together. And anyway, just I know, so many amazing projects. I wish we had time to talk about them all. But you can see how the framework and the disclosure that you have up front. Here's another one. This is Perspective Detectives. This is from Cynthia Sandler. And is Cynthia in the room? Is she in here? Sir, tell me if she's in here. No, I don't think she is. But this is one where students compare different parts of history. So we study World War II, and we all compare what we learned about World War II with students from other countries. So Germany and both in Austria and the UK and the US and Australia and Japan, we all compare. And you know, some may be afraid to compare, but I think it's a very powerful learning experience. And when we talk about getting outside the text, but this is a perfect example. This is one Cynthia is trying to kick off for next year. So you can see her trailer there and contact her through her trailer and find out more about this. But by focusing and sharing all this information and disclosing, it helps you find a good match when you're looking for projects. So here's our next, there we go. Are there any other examples that you want to share here? I'd appreciate if you would share it in the chat, or if you look, there should be some whiteboard tools, and there's something that says create a text label on the page. So if you want to share, I'd love it, especially those of you who have collaborated before, would like to click. Can you just click on here, and you can see how to type. Typing now on the board as an example, or if you want to type in the back channel chat, you may want to put it there as well, about any examples that you'd like to share of these global collaborative projects, of course, besides the one we've talked about. Hope you'll share in the chat with the NERC. I know you know a lot of them, so maybe you can, share those in the chat, any links, any examples to other great global collaborative projects that you've done or you know about, please share those in the chat, and that way I'll know that you're awake and there. Here we go. I've actually just been informed just a moment ago that we have some really bad weather coming here, so you don't have to worry, I never go over anyway. So now here's the big question, where do I find global partners? And I know we have a lot of U.S. People here, and I want to make a very important point that in certain countries, there is a finite number of schools that can collaborate globally at all. And I have to wonder if in 4 or 5 or maybe 8 or 10 years it make it to the point where schools say, you know what, I'm so desperate to collaborate with someone in Africa that will pay for your internet connection to be able to collaborate with us. Is that going to happen? Right now, Sharon Peters from Mozambique is collaborating in racism, and she's one of the best global collaborators in the whole continent of Africa, but she started off in Canada. She did Black Classroom. She's a friend of mine from a long time ago, and she's good at it, and she can do it, but there are a finite number because so many places do not have internet or can't afford to have internet. So it's time to get in now. If this is something you want to do, you need to start collaborating now because you're not going to have this opportunity forever. Once these relationships are established, they're going to be established. So this is something you need to be aware of. Now let's go through 4 primary areas where you can find project partners, or at least where we tend to find it. First of all, you've got some kind of networks around global collaboration. Now, I like this as a way to find people because you can see who's already collaborating and who checks in and who's there. So we've got the globalcollaborations.wikispaces.com. These come from the Learning 2.0 Educational Network. You've got the Flat Classrooms Collaboration Network, flatclassrooms.ning.com. Join all, all these are free from what I understand. You've got globaleducation.ning.com, which Lucy Gray runs. She does great work, and we have a lot of overlap between our groups. And then you've got Taking IT Global, which is an incredible network. They do a lot of wonderful things as well. Now, if I miss anything, and I probably will, everybody, please share that in the chat because we don't want to leave anybody out. There's plenty of room, and global collaboration is still very much in its infancy. And I kind of predict that right now flipped classroom is what everybody's discussing. That on the heels of flipped classroom, you're going to have flat classroom be the big trend after that, or the global collaboration aspects and the collaboration between classrooms and the flattening of the classroom. Because when you start flipping, then you start getting ready to collaborate. So next slide, since you've got some established networks out there, some great places to get started. If this is your first collaboration, I highly suggest that you try to do this. IRON, EPALS, the Scout Education Network, of course, Black Classroom, we're already established and been around for 5 years, 6 years, which is pretty long in global education years. E-Twinning is in Europe, pretty much, so you can't join from here. There are also a lot of other networks. There's Jennifer Wagner, who does a lot of projects through, it used to be called Technos, but now it's Genuine Tech. Susan Silverman used to run a lot. I don't think she's running as many as she used to. But a lot of different places to collaborate. Then you've got this newer way of finding partners, and it's using hashtags. Now, we have the Flat Class hashtag, where we talk about the book, we talk about global collaboration. It's really starting to kind of take off now, but we use that to kind of aggregate this conversation. Then you've got Global Ed, and Global Ed is another one for global education conversations. You have Global Classroom, Michael Graffin has that going on, and they're finishing up their first year. That's actually in 9 months where the teachers collaborate and communicate together. And then you have EdChat, and lots of conversations happen on EdChat. That's just massive that they have there. Now we have, how do we find a fourth way to find project partners? So you've got conferences. Now, Julie and I met at the very first K-12 online conference. I was a presenter talking about wikis. I've been using wikis for, I guess, 7 years now. My students call me the Wikinator. So I was presenting about wikis, and Julie joined in and did an amazing project with Reuven from Israel. And that's how we met, and she found my blog, we started communicating, we connected together. Global Education Conference is another great place. Steve Harmon and Lucy Gray and Black Classroom is kind of a co-sponsor. You've got the ISD project, and a lot of us meet face-to-face. In fact, we have a birds of a feather on the Monday of ISD, and then a lot of us are going out to dinner after that. And then there are lots of, we have a few classroom conferences. We're getting ready to announce where those will be, but we'll have one in Europe and one in Asia this upcoming year. And then there are tons of online conferences now for curriculum area. These are great places to meet people, especially if they're free online conferences, because a lot of us have more energy than we have money. Like me, I don't have a lot of money to do things in my classroom, so I have to kind of work that out. So anyway, these are four great places. So now here's our open-ended question. Where do you connect with other educators? Please share your favorite hashtags. Please share those things that all of you are going. Cindy and Katie, I hope you come Monday night, mark that birds of a feather, because what we do is we go to that and we all try to go out to eat afterwards, which is a lot of fun. So please share in the back channel, where do you collaborate and communicate now? So here's the final question. Oh, Classroom 2.0, Lisa, I've got to add that one to the presentation. Please don't let me forget that. Lisa's our incredible administrator. We appreciate her very much. So when do I know that I am ready to collaborate? Well, a couple things. You do have to get past thinking that it has to be synchronous. I remember a school in the Midwest that had talked to me about doing some things, and they had just put in video conferencing, and they said, we put in video conferencing so that we could collaborate with people in Africa. And I said, oh, really? First of all, who has video conferencing equipment in Africa? And secondly, who's going to get up in the middle of the night? And they said, what? And I said, well, it's a different time zone. I mean, they're not in school when you're in school, so somebody's going to have to get up. Are you going to get up at 4 a.m. or 3 a.m. to conference? And they said, oh, no, we aren't going to do that. I said, well, you're asking them in Africa to come back to school at 8 o'clock at night. And they said, oh, dear, no. Well, you can't collaborate if you expect to be synchronous all the time. So you have to ask yourself, am I willing to redesign? There is a way to step into this. And of course, this webinar is meant as a companion to go with the book, not to replace the book. So if you want to do this, then you can get the book and it will take you through the 7 steps to flatten your classroom. And first of all, you start with connecting yourself. So you do have to kind of transcend things. But this is a term that comes with any goal. Franklin Covey, if you've ever been through their program, they will show that there are 4 characteristics of goals that you actually need. They're realistic, they're bound with time, but one of the characteristics is that you have to own it. It has to be yours. It has to be your goal. It has to be owned by you. And so you as the teacher have to start that. It, to those of you who are administrators, I'm so glad you're here because you have to set the vision for this. If you're on board, it makes it so much easier for the teachers. But you have to be willing to overcome and to work through things. Because here's the thing. We're taught in our classrooms now that problems are bad things. But if we're doing an abstract task, we need problems in order to teach. So we don't have a problem with having problems in math class, right? But we are comfortable with math problems because they're not scary. We're not comfortable with people problems because they scare us. And a lot of us, you know, we are taught that people problems are bad things. They're not bad things. And we kind of have some common things that we learn to expect when you're trying to work through collaboration. Because the goal that I have for my students is that by the time they're done with my keyboarding class, my computer fundamentals class, and my computer science class, that they are equipped and able to collaborate on a global basis. My students do 3 global collaborative projects that span about 6 weeks apiece. Doesn't mean they do it every day, but they do it most days. They know how to produce a video. They know how to communicate in any medium, and they're comfortable doing that. And I own it. When we have problems, I own those problems, and I will make sure that I do what it takes to advocate to get things worked through and to overcome. And so if you don't have that commitment to overcome, especially if you're going to be a pioneer, then you need to ask yourself, can I do this? You know, administrators have 2 choices. They can be the obstacle or remove the obstacle. If your administrator is an obstacle, if your IT department is an obstacle, it's going to be challenging for you. You can still do it, but it's going to be challenging. I have a collaboration that really has not been a collaboration with a school that was a wonderful project. But they couldn't use Wiki, they couldn't use blogs, they couldn't even email us. It was really pitiful. It was just between me and the teacher, and I'm not ever going to do that again because it just doesn't work. So the question is, will you own it? Does it belong to you? And am I willing to redesign my curriculum to embed into? So we have to ask that question again. Now, it's, wow, what timing here. So what questions do you still have? Let's see, Barbara McFall has something in here. It says, takes work since many problems are very abstract and hard for younger kids, but very rewarding as you begin to think at higher levels and start owning the project themselves. And, you know, Barbara, you just hit on something beautiful that I need to add to this presentation, and it's amazing how this happens when you do this with a live audience, is that, you know, your goal is that eventually the students will own things. And it becomes theirs, and they'll learn how to collaborate, and they'll learn how to work together. Very powerful thing happened with our current NetGen project. We have student project managers and student assistant managers, and the students run that project. We decided to start training the students on online leadership. And what we've seen is an incredible amount of collaboration when you train the students. And from now on, we're going to start having student managers on as many projects as possible because, and my daughter, I have to admit, my daughter is a project manager for one of the teams, and how excited she's gotten and how much she's learned in the conversations we've had. And she says, you know, Mom, some people just don't want to collaborate. They don't answer when you leave messages on their page and when you email them. And what do you do when people don't want to collaborate? How do you help them engage in what your project is? And I'm sitting here thinking, you know what? She's going to be talking about this when she's a manager in 10 years. And she's talking about it now in 10th grade. This is an abstract learning test. She's going to have a leg up. She's going to have an advantage over other kids because she can do this. And this is what we need. You know, it's mostly U.S. here. We probably have some non-U.S., but as a U.S. citizen, this is the kind of thing that can make our students competitive. And it's not taking a test. It's abstract thinking skills proven by what they do. I think that every school should have an e-folio, and students should put in their e-folio what they've accomplished, and teachers should, you know, judge me by my students. Please do evaluate me by my students, but do that through artifacts, not through tests. I think tests are a pretty pitiful measure of what they know in computer science. So let's see if we have any other questions. FlatClassroomBook.com is our website. We do have one more session the week after Mother's Day, the Sunday after Mother's Day, where we'll be kind of celebrating things. I don't see any other questions in the chat. If there are any that I've missed, please let me know. I will go back to you, Christine, to see if you've noticed any chats. The K-2 pilot is Flat Class Kids. Everything is in Flat Class. That hashtag is right there. We haven't split into smaller hashtags yet, Betsy, just because that's not necessary yet. But Betsy, if you'll email Julie, you know she'll get you in the next pilot. I would just email her. Julie@flatclassroom.org. So, Christina, over to you to see if you've noticed any questions. The weather's getting pretty bad here. I don't know if we're going to have hail or not. So let's see if you've noticed anything or if you want to wrap up what you want to say. Here you go, Christine.
Thank you. That was fantastic. I did not see, it looks like the questions that people had, looks like it's gotten answered, but if anybody has a last minute question, go ahead and type it in the chat box and I'll go ahead and announce it to the rest of the group if you don't want to speak up. But thank you again for your time this evening, and I will put the website for the book. I know you can also find it on Amazon, which I believe they gave you that link. You can also buy it directly from Pearson, or of course you can find it at all the retail sites as well, such as Amazon. But let me see. I don't see anybody else doesn't have any other questions. So I guess we can wrap up, and Vicki, I hope you do stay away from hail if you do have some. I hope you're not near a window.
Well, I'm back to drive home because of internet problems. I saw one question about students collaborating on writing a book. There are some fan fiction type approaches, and I put something on my blog, I think, last week. I don't think it's really developed to where it needs to be yet, so that's kind of a beginning type thing. We're talking about taking some of our wikis and could we get them to the point where the students could write a book together that way. I think that there are some wikis that do that. They may not be printed. It's 1001 wiki tales. That may be one. So if anybody knows the answer to that question, I don't recall your name there. Finding the right fit. But if somebody has that answer, that would be great. And I think we're going to conclude today so that I can drive home. I am sorry for my mess back here and my no drama sign, which has been made. We had field day last week and I've got so many issues going on, and so I am pointing to that sign about 5 times a day. No drama. But anyway, thank you all for coming, and please join us at FlatClassroomBook.com. Also, one other note, if you buy this book on Kindle,
engaging in conversation and following everybody who leaves Kindle comments, because you can go to kindle.amazon.com and we can converse and see who all is highlighting what, and that's just a fascinating experience for me, seeing what people are highlighting and then following and conversing with the people who are reading the book. I think eventually it will be a lot more powerful experience to be able to do that. But we are coming out, I believe, with a new copy of the Kindle edition that won't be quite as large, because right now it has all the graphics in it. So that will be coming out here pretty soon. And the PD toolkit will be released in just a few weeks as well. So the Certified Teacher course for our webinars, you'll have to ask Christine about the CEU certificate for our webinars. Our Flat Classroom Certified Teacher Program is a college course that you can get graduate or undergrad credit for from the University of Northern Iowa. This webinar itself, Christine will have to do that. So please email Christine if you want a CEU certificate for this webinar. Please email Christine and she will handle that for the certificate for the professional development credit. I'll stay here for just a moment and thank you all for coming. You've been a great audience and thank you for voting. That means you're there. Thank you so much.